The most dangerous things in sales are the things that go undetected, those subtle things that seem to go under the radar. Today, we're going to talk all about a silent killer of deals and, more importantly, what you can do about it. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we get down to business, I just want to let you guys know that this episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our new program that's going to be coming up starting this Thursday, August 10th, by the name of How to Take Better Control of Your Opportunities. And I'm going to be talking more about it at the end of the podcast. But if you guys are like impatient like I am and the bulk of the sales population, like we just like kind of need to cut to the chase in sales, right? Like we need to know now. We're horrible with like spoilers and shit. But anyway, if you'd like to learn about it now, you can visit yoursalesplaybook.com/control. yoursalesplaybook.com/control. And you guys know how I like to roll. One of my biggest freaking pet peeves in like the whole wide world are these podcasts where people spend all this time dicking around and not getting to the point. I know you guys are busy, and I don't like to be, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this. All of a sudden, you're like 5 and 6 and 7 minutes into a podcast or even a webinar, and people are still talking about what they're going to be talking to you about. Or if it's like co-hosted, there's all this cute little like bantering back and forth and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if I want that, I'll listen to sports radio. But having said that and completing my mini rant, let's get down to business. So today we're going to be talking about this whole business of how do you keep your message front and center throughout the sales process. And I've kind of just given the spoiler right there. I had said to you that there's something that happens that's very, very subtle that goes beneath, like flies under the radar. And really what it is, it's this whole business that you and I can be forgotten about very, very easily. And it's not just a matter of like you and I, like in a selfish, egotistical way. When I say you and I mean like our widget, our solution. And if you really look at what happens in a typical meeting, if we do our job properly, and one of the benefits of doing a really good needs analysis is that you will jumpstart emotions. If you really think about the power of kick-ass questions, they have the ability to get people excited, either in kind of, and I hate to say it this way, in a negative way, like realizing that what they have in place might be, you know, like there's some deficiencies. Or in a really positive way, like, you know, okay, you know, let's help you embrace some really cool opportunities that could either make you look like a rock star or add, you know, top line revenue, bottom line savings. You guys know the deal, right? So we have this meeting that between really good questions and hopefully doing a really good presentation of our solutions, we've got everybody excited. But how many times, and let's all be honest because nobody's really watching, but let's be honest, how many times have we had those meetings where later on it's like maybe they disappear and they go MIA, or maybe a week goes by and they just don't seem to have that same level of enthusiasm that they had when we were meeting with them. So the thing that I want you to be aware of, and then we're going to talk about how to get around it, is that you are absolutely at your most vulnerable point of the sales cycle between meetings. Because when you're in front of them, you can see their face. Even when you're on the phone, right, you can get the vibe and you hear their voice. And, you know, people usually share things with you and you can gauge interest and all that. But I want you to think about everything that happens the minute you leave a meeting, the minute you shake their hands and say, all right, you know, next steps are going to be as follows, and you go their way, or you go your way, they go their way, or you, you know, exit the phone call or the WebEx or the Skype session. Think about everything that happens in your prospect's world that can take them away from all that excitement, all that momentum that was created during your time together. That can fizzle out very, very quickly. And I want you to understand, like, why you're most vulnerable during that time and attention spans and all that. I mean, well, first of all, there's a lot of noise coming at your prospect. I mean, you guys, I'm not going to go through it again, but I have like my pet statistics where I always talk about all the advertising messages and how much like stuff the average person consumes just on a daily basis. How many times people are interrupted throughout the day, how many meetings, how many phone calls. But it gets deeper than that. How about stakeholders that you're not around that are whispering in that decision maker's ear? And it might not be on your behalf. They might be saying, well, I really don't think we should do this, or, you know, it seemed really pricey, right? Or I think we should do nothing, or I think we should stay with old Joe. Old Joe's a good guy. But also, you have competitors who are influencing your prospect. You're not there to defend yourself. And they could be influencing them with, like, the wrong ideas in their head. That happens, right? So we're going to talk about what we can do about that today. So the very first thing that I want to do is really teach you how to fish before I give you some actual fish, if you will. Or like, if you're more of, like a meat and potatoes type of dude like me, give you a few steaks today on the house. So the very first thing I want you to think about, whenever you have a challenge and whenever you want to think through it, there's a really cool problem-solving question that I teach all of my coaching clients, and it's very, very simple. It's a fill-in-the-blank question, so you could use it really. It's a multi-purpose type of brainstorming question, thinking question. So in a thinking type of context, the question simply is, in what ways can I? In what ways can I? So the question here, if we're really thinking about like how vulnerable we are between meetings, there's like a few questions we could ask ourselves. Well, one could be, in what ways can I become like less vulnerable between meetings? But I think a better question to ask would be, in what ways can I stay in touch, stay top of mind without, you know, any of this like calling to check in type of nonsense? And most importantly, and this is the part, if you're not driving, that I want you to circle and put little arrows and over here, dude, or dudette, or whatever. But, you know, in what ways can I keep our difference front and center? Let me say that again. In what ways can I keep our difference, or my difference, front and center? And hopefully you guys know what I mean by like difference. People buy difference, right? I mean, that's one of those things in sales. Like, we love to say people buy from people they know, like, and trust. The other thing we love to say, you've got to provide value. Well, you know, and I'm a consultant and I'm a trusted advisor. Well, there's one of them that really, like, people haven't been beating the shit out of, you know, like, for a while. So maybe it's up to your Uncle Paul to bring it back so everybody can beat the shit out of it again. But the other one is that people buy difference, you know, and when you think about it, in a world of a lot of choices, people will weigh one against the other. Now, one of the things you have to be aware of, and you can say duh after the statement, but it needs to be said, my podcast, Tough Shit If You Don't Like It. See, I'm getting all violent, and I really didn't have that much. Actually, I did have a considerable amount of caffeine today. So there you go. So I guess I should apologize, but I won't. So here's the deal. When you really think about it, in the absence of value, or really in the absence of a notable difference between your widget and the other choices of widgets that are out there, in the absence of value, if you haven't provided that difference, people are going to default to price. And that's not necessarily the best way for people to decide, right? We know that we're selling against that all the time. That's what we're trying to educate people on. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're keeping that difference, the thing that makes our solution better, different, faster, like you think of like the money verbs, things that can reduce, increase, decrease, that kind of thing. But many times what happens is that when we're in that meeting with people, we do a decent job of hammering home the value proposition, the selling points, right? The bells and the whistles. And then we sort of leave it to chance. And we don't really, I think we fail to understand something. I'm going to tell you this a few different ways. One of them is going to be really brutal. you're going to remember it because it's probably not the nicest way that I can say it, but it just needs to be out there unfiltered. So the nicer way of saying it is that people have a limited attention span, that people aren't thinking about you and I 24/7. The example that I give all the time in my webinars, and as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I have a program that's going to be coming up starting this Thursday. Those of you who follow me and get my emails, certainly this podcast, my blog posts, things that I do on LinkedIn and over on Twitter and so on and so forth, I repeat the hell out of that message because people aren't running around thinking about how they can buy from Uncle Paul. So I need to remind them that I've got this thing coming up because and the point that I always make in my webinars is I'll say to them when we talk about this, think about this webinar, for example. I mean, how many of you just, you thought about doing this 2 weeks ago and then life sort of happened. You had great intentions and all these things took your attention away from enrolling in this program. And meanwhile, you saw the value of it. You realized that it would easily make you your money back and then some, right? Help you have a stronger year. Maybe you were just at that point where you're like, yeah, enough, man. I gotta work with this guy, Castain. He's been riding shotgun with me on these podcasts for the last 5 years. But then those great intentions get taken away like the Roaring Rapids. So that's one way of saying it. Let me tell you the brutal way. People need to be beaten over the head with a message. And again, I know that there's going to be thought leaders that say, well, that's just a really poor way of saying it. I really don't give a shit if anybody thinks it's a poor way of saying it. My job is to impart the lesson to you. And I think you're going to remember that second one more than the first one. First one was really wordy, and I was like going through the whole thing. The second one is that people really have to be beaten over the head with a message. Now, I don't mean that we're an asshole about it every time we do it. And the message is just totally like lacking in value. I don't mean that at all. I'm just saying that we need repetition in our sales cycle, that if you think that this is a one and done thing, that it's a box that we check during that discovery call or whatever, right? During the presentation, we talk about these awesome things and how we can help and how we can address their pain. And so we do it once and it's done. You are leaving way too much to chance, and I'm here to tell you, this right here, if you can fix it, is going to bring your numbers dramatically up because I really believe this is the real reason why we lose a lot of deals. So now that I've just preached the hell out of it and really kind of hovered on violating another one of my policies. Remember earlier I said to you, one of my policies with my podcast, I really don't like to spend a lot of time telling you what I'm going to be telling you. But my other pet peeve with certain thought leaders, by the way, and certain people with their podcasts and stuff, is the world doesn't need more philosophical shit. What we need is, okay, give us the philosophy, but how about a few how-tos? And I'll give you an example, and then we'll get back to this, I promise you. I mean, there's people that love to go around talking about value and how important it is and stuff like that. I agree. I think it's tremendous, it's tremendous, right? I mean, we I'm on board with it. But they keep it at the philosophical level. I mean, talking about this shit and, sitting there and, trying to sound more intelligent than the next person isn't going to put money in your pocket. What's going to put money in your pocket is when that same thought leader says, and here's three ways that you can do it. And here's how we can roll up our sleeves and you leverage this particular philosophy or principle or whatever. So having said that, let me give you now some specifics. So we said that we need repetition throughout the entire sales cycle. And what are we repeating? We're repeating several things. I mean, or really for now, just a few things. And what we're repeating are the things like in that meeting, if you noticed that when you ask certain questions, if they really, like, it jump-started the emotions and they really just, you know, shared a painful story, or they shared excitement over, you know, the prospect of something better coming their way or what it could do for their organization. They perked up. The whole body language thing was happening. Their eyes lit up. Their rate of speech increased. Their enthusiasm went through the roof, right? That's, you know, obviously why we have to pay attention to those things. That then you need to make a note to self to repeat that shit. Right? Now, the other part of it is when you have things that are just very important for them to know that separates you from the pack. Because like I always say when it comes to talking about my sales coaching services, or certainly like this time of year, I'm talking to a lot of companies about doing their sales kickoff meetings and keynote speeches in January and in the fall and first quarter of 2018. But, you know, what I like to convey to them is not all speakers are created equal. Not all sales coaches are created equal. And, you know, here are the things that separate me from, you know, the people that are out there. And that's what people really want. They want to be able to narrow it down so that they, you know, we're in a world with way too many choices. So we need to help them eliminate, without saying, yeah, eliminate ABC company. They suck. Don't use them. I'm not talking about that. I mean, educate them on how to buy your widget properly. And that's the thing. Like on the sales coaching side, I created a guide for people to help them and gave them I've given the questions that they should ask a potential coach, what they should be looking for in that coach's background, the red flags to be looking for, the whole bit. But that's one way of me repeating that message. The other way is, you know, in my conversations with them, in my follow-up emails and all. But how are you going to repeat key parts of your offering? How are you going to repeat the things where they perked up, whether it be in questions or a topic, or when you had your talking points, presenting your solutions, maybe something in your demo that they loved? They particularly loved the feature and said, oh my gosh, we really love this because, you know, you have to think back on that. But you also have to think about the things, again, that are going to help you stand out from the rest and then repeat that throughout the process. So really one of the first steps that I want you to consider is think about all the different ways that you're going to repeat these things that make you stand out, the things that make, like, communicating your difference. And I want you to create a communication map. So that's one of, like, the Uncle Paulisms that you will find in, like, 99% of my webinars, my coaching practice, certainly my sales training. I teach a process, and I call it communication mapping. Communication mapping is a multi-use type of tool for you. And you could use it when you're hunting new business where, you know, you have these suspects, you want to turn them into opportunities and suspects, as you will. But in this context, we can use communication mapping to keep in touch with people in the most impactful way. And part of that is with none of this calling to check in shit, right? That is just done. It is old hat. Nobody should be doing that right now. It just devalues the whole, like, purpose of you being there if you're going to sound like another Me Too sales rep. So communication mapping is when we think of, in this context, what are the things that we need to drive home? And with every prospect, it's going to be different. What are the things that we really need to drive home throughout the process? And then you start thinking about, okay, what are the tools that are at my disposal to carry that message, right? The platform, the venue, if you will. So there'll be, I mean, obviously there's phone calls, right? There's follow-up meetings. There's snail mail, there's FedEx, there's sending along something, you know, with by messenger. There are creative things that you could be doing. There are things, believe it or not, over on LinkedIn. There's a lot of different venues, if you will. So you're thinking about, okay, what are the messages, or like what's this difference, or like these points of differentiation that I want to reinforce throughout the sales cycle, not just once, but in my dealings with the ABC company and in their consideration of hiring Castain Training Systems, what are the points that I want to drive home with them? What are the different ways of conveying that message, venues, if you will, platforms? And then what you do is now you just kind of decide on all that. And then you put it together into a map. And I don't mean like you have to draw it out like a map and compass and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you just kind of think it out and just kind of say, all right, from the moment we end that meeting, what am I going to do to keep these things alive? So I'm going to give you a few examples now, but really the bulk of it, if you know, it's really going to be either up to you to think of how you're going to keep in touch. I'll certainly give you enough ideas today, but I'm also going to give a plug for this upcoming program, because a lot of what I'm going to be talking about in our How to Take Better Control of Your Opportunities program is going to be this concept of communication mapping. And again, if you want to learn about that, I want you to go to yoursalesplaybook.com/control. And you're going to need to do it soon, actually, because we kick off this week. So anyway, one of the first things you can do, and this one you're going to say duh to, but nobody does it. But remember, we want to stay in touch, and we want to separate ourselves from everybody else. So obviously, after someone is generous and gives you their time, I don't care if it's face-to-face, if it's Skype session, if it's WebEx, whatever, it doesn't really matter. What I want you to do is remember your manners and send them a handwritten thank you. The 99.9% of the sales population, including yours truly, will roll their eyes when they hear that shit. I just rolled my eyes saying that shit. So I'm right with you. But everybody hangs their freaking head when the follow-up question comes, which is how many people are actually doing it, right? We all know that's one of those things that I think we have to make a note to do a better job with it. Like nobody, everybody knows it. Everybody will declare it, sales 101. That is basic. And yet we don't do it. So that's like, that should be like the first step on your communication map. But the other thing that I really like to do is to send a recap. And I send the recap two different ways. Why? Because I want two touches out of it, like two ways of them bumping into my value proposition, bumping into Paul Castain, creating that sense of Uncle Paul's favorite word in the whole wide world, to the point that I just slipped into talking about myself in the third person, which is freaking pathetic. It's establishing propinquity and nearness and closeness and kinship with people. That, to me, comes before the whole no like and trust thing. So one of the ways that I do that is I send a recap. Now, you might have been taught that you send a recap because it's good business etiquette. It shows that you're on top of your shit, that you're organized, and that, you know what I mean, that you're very thorough. And you would be right in thinking that. But it's just like a lot of other things in sales. That's nothing compared to what it really does. So the other thing that it does is it reminds people of what they found valuable. So if you send them through an email first, and you know, like it starts off thanking them, nothing wrong with being gracious, say, here's a quick recap of my notes. And now you list some of the things you talked about. It has the ability to bring them right back to it. Now, the little trick that you want to do to bring people right back to an emotional state is use a recap to do that. But what you want to do is use their exact words and phrases. So many times when I meet with a company, and many times I meet with a VP of sales who's considering hiring me to train their sales force, one of the things when I do my needs analysis that I discover many times, people will say things to me that we're losing way too many sales reps, you know, due to turnover, bad morale, and it's killing us. So if you said that to me, when I do the recap, I'm going to say exactly that in quotation marks, because there's a few things that this accomplishes. Number one, people have stories and want to be heard. You've heard me say that before. Everyone has a story and wants to be heard. So you score points for showing that you truly listen to them, right? That's a very important quality. I think, you know, it's one of those qualities that goes below the surface. It's kind of, you know, you almost can't articulate it, that it's just more of a feeling that that generates, wow, this person listened to me. And the other thing that it does is that using their words and phrases, how can they possibly push back and object to that which they have communicated to you? How could they possibly give you a hard time over that, right? Although I think probably there's got to be one lone asshole out there that would. But, you know, I mean, statistically speaking, I think you're golden with that. But using their words and phrases, it triggers, it's an emotional trigger. And I want to give you an example of why. When I teach questioning techniques, I often will bring up this example. I want you guys, especially like the bulk of the people listening to this are in sales, think about a bad travel experience that you've had recently. It could be with the airline screwing things up, could be with the hotel. It could be with the place that, you know, that you got there and transportation was all botched up or whatever it is, and it caused all these things. Now, when you have a bad experience and then you tell somebody about it later, what happens to your emotions? As you're telling the story, are you calm and all happy when you're telling a bullshit story? When you're telling when you're talking to people about something that's upsetting to you, what happens? You get upset all over again. And that is part of the beauty of the recap. Because, and by the way, it works the other way too. When you tell a story about something was exciting to you and happy to you, like when I tell a story about how my wife and I met many, many years ago, you know, I get like happy all over again. I mean, so it's just, you know, it's just what happens to the emotions. So I say, why not facilitate that process? And emotions really are the key to the sale. If we can help navigate those emotions, then that's, to me, the bulk of the battle here. It's an emotional battle more than it is a logical battle, because they're going to justify with the logic, but the emotions are what it's what's going to lead them to the point where, like, I'd like to buy from Castain, right? So that's why the recap is really, really important. So far, we're bumping into them with a thank you card handwritten. None of this, like, people tell me, I sent a thank you. I sent an email. Yeah, that's lame. Hang your head. You shouldn't be doing that. Seriously. I mean, I would accept you sending a picture of you giving them the finger before I would accept you sending them a shitty email that everybody else sent. Or worse yet, one of those, like, e-cards or whatever, which I hate. But anyway, don't get me going on that. So we talked about this recap. I said I sent it two different ways. One way is that I email it, but the other thing that I do is I print it out and I FedEx it to them. That gives me one more opportunity to bump into them. One of the things that I do is I will, during the meeting, I will assign homework. And I start with my homework at the end of the meeting. And I'll say something like, well, obviously, I'm going to have my homework cut out for me. And, you know, here's what, based on what we talked about today, what I'm going to need to do. And then when I get done with that, because nobody ever gets pissed off at you for giving yourself things to do. In fact, they're going to probably help stack that pile of stuff you have to do. But then you say, okay, fair is fair. Here's what I'm going to be doing. But, you know, one of the things that we had talked about is you're going to need to talk with those other department heads, check their schedule, and see if we can get everybody together in the near future so we can hear from them as well, because they're going to be participating in the decision you had mentioned. So, you know, is it fair to assume that we could get that from you by Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever? Like, keep that leash nice and tight by putting timelines on it. But the homework is very important, because while people are doing tasks that you've given them to do, now they're thinking about you again. They're also given the opportunity to see, to test drive what it is like to work with you in a collaborative type of arrangement. Because if you think about it, if we do a good job and we bring them home as a client, we're going to be working with them on projects and there's going to be interaction. So this demonstrates what it's like to work with you without, like you remember earlier I said, I don't like a lot of philosophies. I like, here's how you do it. Well, in a philosophical sense, I could tell you that, listen, if you work with me as your coach, these are some of the things I do. That's all well and good. And I could do a really great job, I hope, of, you know, helping you see where I'm different. But if I give you some things to do, and now you're thinking of Paul Castain, and you're thinking about things that are important to a coaching relationship and getting things done in the areas that you want to get better at and everything, see, momentum now continues and it doesn't die out. And that's what kills deals, right? When the momentum just like slows down to a crawl and then a million other things come across your attention span and all this. And so, but what's happening here is now you're seeing what it's like to work with me. So instead of just like philosophical and little sales speak and, you know, little like carefully crafted little sales speak, you know, talking points, you're actually experiencing it and doing it. And I guarantee you, while you're doing my homework, you're most probably not thinking about my competitors, unless I'm a real dick about it and I pile it high and you're like, I think these other guys might be better. Castain obviously doesn't want me to have a life. So those are some things, but there's more that I want you to think about. Things that you need to provide, like between the meetings and throughout the entire process, using evidence. And we use evidence, quote unquote evidence, to help reduce doubt and skepticism and hopefully reduce the probability of getting some objections here. So there are different forms of evidence, and I teach over 12 different types. I'll just give you a handful for now because I don't want to give away the whole store to you. But obviously, providing statistics to people, providing testimonials and references can be really, really important, and case studies. And, you know, it's like, to me, it's like as many of those things as you can provide, it helps get people off the fence of indifference. It helps for you to establish the difference that we keep talking about, but in a way that you have nothing to hide. I can tell you all day long that, you know what, I am a really good sales trainer, right? If I want to be arrogant, I am a really good sales trainer. And on my website, I can tell you I'm a really good sales trainer. But one of the things I do instead is I provide evidence on my website. And one of the ways that I do it is that pretty much any page that talks about my services, you will see testimonials there. And you will see real testimonials. And what I mean by that is none of this, like, which is comical to me. I'll see these people, all the sales trainers doing it. You know, so-and-so was an incredible trainer and, you know, my team thought he was kick-ass and blah, 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 blah. And then when you look to see who wrote this, it just says something along the lines of VP of Sales, Pharmaceutical Industry. Okay, great. That narrowed it down to 6 million freaking people. Like, wait, that's believable? That, to me, I mean, I could write shit like that and tell you, you know, president of multinational company. You're never going to know because I haven't told you who it was. So instead, you will see with my testimonials that there are real people. Imagine that. Real company names, so that you can, like, get this, look them up on LinkedIn. contact them and say, is this Castain guy for real? And I really believe, by the way, that really underscores the way, part of the way people like to buy today. I believe that with the internet now, part of the process that people like to embrace is by like being able to look at you anonymously and safely from a distance and checking you out online and seeing what other people have to say about you. I mean, think about it. Like a lot of the things now we buy on Amazon and online, do you guys look at the reviews? Because I do. I mean, it could be, I can't tell you how many times I look at something like, wow, this looks really great. And then I look and I see all these crap reviews. And I tend to lean toward the reviews. I really think there's a lot of merit in that. So testimonials as a form of evidence answer the question, who says so besides yourself? And that's something that your prospect, if they don't ask you to your face, which many of them will be too polite to do that, they're thinking it, right? I mean, when you are the buyer, you're thinking it too. Who says so besides yourself? Your job. You're paid to tell me you're awesome. You're paid to tell me that this is best in class and all that other stuff. But seriously, who says so besides yourself? So you need to provide some of that stuff. But you also can think about things like case studies. And you want to provide these things not once, not twice, but several times. Because, like I said before, for lack of a better way to say it, we really do have to beat people over the head with the message. And just like continually have them bump into it in a way that isn't creepy or repetitious. So it doesn't feel repetitious, but it underscores the points of differentiation and helps them make this whole decision-making process much easier. So we have the case study part of it, right? You want to supply them with that. But also, don't forget, many of these things can also be supplied as physical evidence. And what I mean by that is we can send it through snail mail, which nobody does. The beautiful thing about snail mail is that we sometimes just underestimate the power of somebody physically holding something in their hand and even the visual ability that we have with that, printing out something and packaging it very nicely for them. Also, I mean, and we put it in the same category, but obviously FedExing and sending something by messenger can be pretty good too. Because what I like about FedEx and by sending something by messenger is that these things arrive at times of day when the mail typically isn't there. So the mail arrives and there's a pile of mail. Many times FedEx is too, but I think that there is a sense of urgency about a FedEx, and there's certainly a sense of urgency about a messenger, to the point that I really don't think that somebody's going to say, hey, that's awesome that you sent it by messenger. Hey, why don't you put it in the pile of all the other things I've received by messenger today? Like, nobody really does that unless you're in an industry where everybody's sending something by messenger. But for the rest of us, great opportunity to stand out. So physical evidence is very, very important to reinforce your point. But, you know, the other thing too is how about something creative to reinforce a point? Now, pardon me, I am not going to edit out that cough. Tough shit. But I have a client that I talk about a lot, and I have several clients who have done this. But this one was like the first client who did this, and I thought it was a great idea. Asked them if I can share the idea. But I've often talked about video messages to people, like on the approach to have them consider you, right? Like when they're a suspect, hopefully to turn them into a prospect and an appointment, embedding like a video, whatever. But one of the things that one of my clients did a while ago is they did a behind-the-scenes tour. And what they did was they stopped at each department. And first of all, they shot this right on an iPhone because my feeling is like the video really needs to be like raw and unproduced. Because when you see something that's really polished and corporate and everything else, I don't think you're as trusting as something. I don't think it appears as real. So what they did was they worked it out ahead of time, and they told each department head, and there wasn't a ton of them. There was like, I don't know, like half a dozen or whatever it is. They said, "We're going to stop by very quickly. We want you to introduce yourself and give like a very quick, like equivalent of an elevator speech of how you would be supporting this company if they were to work with us and your role in that whole thing." So what each department head did was they addressed the prospect by name. So let's just say they were sending it to Paul Castain. They would say, "Hi, Paul. My name is Todd from this department. Here's typically how I work with our clients and how you and I might be working together if you come on board. Needless to say, I'm very excited about you considering us. Hope we can work together." See, very, very quick in and out type of message, but they even stopped by the president's office. Now, what they were trying to really underscore here, because remember, the whole point of this is not just keeping in touch. It's keeping in touch and solidifying and repeating what your difference is, the thing that sets you apart. So this particular company, the big point of differentiation, the big thing that they wanted to get out there to this prospect was that they are big enough to handle their account, but they are small enough to give them that small company attention. So here they are, they're like a, I don't know, like a They're like a $15 million company. And yet, each one of the department heads thought enough to address them by name, make them feel like part of the family. And there's the president of the company and offering his direct line. "I want you to reach out to call me. Any questions? And please understand that if we work together, then I'm still going to be available to you then." Because that's going to be the most important part of the relationship, keeping and continually earning your business, which I thought was brilliant. Now, they didn't stop there, because remember, we want to continually beat people over the head with the message. We want to continually repeat the message and drive it home. What they did was they followed up with the bios of some of the people and handwritten notes, by the way, right on the bio of the people that would be working with the account behind the scenes and all, like people in customer service, people, the account manager, for example, things like that, the person who was head of that department. And that really worked out really, really well. Again, it would be from people who would be working behind the scenes with them. What I need you to understand right about now is that I'm not saying any of these ideas are the most brilliant, but I'm telling you, nobody does them. And this, see, the way that we can win a deal, wouldn't it be great if we could just come right in with a knockout punch? But there's so much out there right now that sometimes it's very hard to do that. So what we have to also concentrate on is all the little things that move us a little bit apart. And then another little thing gets tacked on top of that. Another little thing that when you start adding those all up, that could be a 20% difference or a 30% difference, enough to make it noticeable. Now, when you add it all up and you realize that at every step of the sales cycle, you were standing out. That to me makes you more of a logical choice than your competitors. So those are some things that you can do. But also too, I just want to remind you, your main takeaway today is looking at, well, on a case-by-case basis, what are the points that I really have to reiterate several times so that they really, really grasp it? And with that, I mean, there you have it. I mean, several ways for you to stay in touch and keep your difference alive. Because I'm here to tell you, folks, that as good as you and I are, we become incredibly vulnerable to a variety of things, the deal stalling out, people whispering in that prospect's ears, loss of interest. Maybe it's just easier to cling to the status quo. So it's right there, several ideas for you. This could actually be something that you guys talk about in your sales meeting. Sales managers listening to this, and even sales reps, go to your sales manager and say, "That nut Castain was talking about this concept of how we keep things alive and continue to reinforce our difference after the meeting, between meetings, without calling the check-in and all that." And, I thought it'd be a good idea to brainstorm it. You could take that brainstorming question I gave you, in what ways can I, turn it into a team thing and change the I to we In what ways can we stand out between meetings? In what ways can we reinforce and reiterate our difference without calling the check-in? So this all falls under the heading of taking better control of your opportunities. We've been talking a lot about that because we're actually going to be talking about this even more during our upcoming How to Take Better Control of Your Opportunities program. It's going to be starting this Thursday, August 10th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And here's the deal. It's a two-session mini course. You can absolutely go at your own pace because I'm going to be offering it live. I record all of my sessions and I will be sending out the replay. It's usually like an hour after I offer it live. So what's really cool about doing it that way is that if you'd like to join us live, come on, the more the merrier. I'd love to hang out with you guys. If you can't, because I know you're busy, you can, I mean, for all I care, you could do this at 4 a.m. in the morning. You could do it 9:30 at night or whatever. But don't let the fact that you're busy ever get in the way of you developing your sales chops. I mean, you really do have to, at some point, get some skin in the game and invest in yourself. And the pricing of my programs is not such you guys have to go off and sell off a kidney, right? So let me take you through what we're going to be covering. So in session one, which is going to be this Thursday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, we're going to talk about things like the one question you have to ask, like the minute you set an appointment that's going to help you gain control. But I want to be clear, without being controlling, without being manipulative, without being a jerk or like that really like pushy salesperson type, we're going to talk about the pre-appointment packet that you have to get into your prospect's hands before your meeting. You have to get it in their hands before it, and it's really going to help you in several ways. We're going to talk about a template that's going to help you take immediate control in your next meeting, 12 tactics that safeguard your deal from obstacles, stalls, and objections, 5 types of questions with examples that jumpstarts your prospect's emotions. Remember we talked about that today, like how these questions and when we're having that meeting, we jumpstart their emotions. I'm going to tell you how to do it. But the one guarantee you will always get from me when it comes to teaching you about questions, I am not going to go the typical route. The typical route is, let's talk about open-ended questions and closed probes. You could not pay me enough to teach that shit. I was sick of that 20 years ago. Yeah, it's important, but that gets eye rolls in class. I come to the party with 5 types of questions that get your pen moving, that get you saying, oh my God, I never thought about that. Wow, that makes sense. Holy shit, I got to get out there and do it. I call it my holy shit guarantee, by the way. But we're going to talk about that. But also in session 2, which happens a week later on August 17th, don't forget, if you got a thing that day, you can go at your own pace and just review the replay. We're going to talk about the one question you have to ask before presenting your solutions. 3 things to include in your proposals that your competitors never include. Think about that and how cool that is as a way of standing out. How to keep your discussions from going prematurely to price. That never happens to you, right? Like people never like stop your show and say, how much is this going to cost? Like we're going to talk about how to keep that from happening because there's really a good way of handling that before it ever happens. We're going to talk about 12 ways to reduce doubt, skepticism, and objections. And keep the deal moving forward. That's important. Keep that momentum going. How to keep all of the stakeholders involved and engaged, and especially between meetings like we were talking about today. 3 psychological techniques that absolutely work like a charm. And there's nothing like evil about them or pushy or manipulative. I mean, psychology is a very big part of sales. And I think it's very important that we embrace those techniques and tactics. And we're certainly going to talk about a communication plan to stay top of mind. Now, we touched on that today. But by the end of that program, I'm going to give you so many ideas. And then I'm going to talk to you about how to put it into a map where we're going to start with things to do before the meeting, things during the meeting, and then what you can do after the meeting without calling the check-in. I'm going to give you several additional ideas over and above what I gave you today. So if you guys want to learn more, and even more importantly, like, sign up, because here it is the 6th as I am like recording this, and we are going live with this on the 10th. My advice to you, again, because we talked about attention span, didn't we? And that we have great like intentions and then something takes away from it. So my advice to you is to immediately go and check this out for yourself if it's something that you're interested in. And if you're still interested, sign up. Don't like, say, I'm going to do it later. Cut that like procrastination shit right out of your life. Go visit yoursalesplaybook.com/control. That's yoursalesplaybook.com/control. And with that, I am Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com for more information about my programs and speaking engagements. Simply visit yoursalesplaybook.com/hire_Paul.